Take a look at your hands. When was the last time you stopped to just marvel at them? We have hands that can do things like knit, draw, throw pots, build houses. In fact, there's a philosopher, Colin McGinn, who thinks hands are what made us human. He lays out his argument in his book, Prehension. He told Steve Paulson it's a kind of hymn to the hand.
Colin, you make the case that the hand was a crucial part of human evolution. In fact, it's what separated us from the rest of the animal world. What's so special about our hands?
Well, it's not so much that our hand at the origin of human species was special, because it was just a descendant of the hands of our primate ancestors, who were lemur-like animals. So they weren't so different from the hands of contemporary primates like gibbons. So what needs to be added to it is the fact that we were forced to descend from trees, probably because of climate change, maybe an ice age. And our hands, which were adapted to life in the trees, particularly for swinging and holding on, climbing, those hands then were liberated from their previous uses. And when we were driven down to the ground and became terrestrial, not arboreal, then we had to adapt to our new conditions, which was no easy thing because we were not adapted to that lifestyle. The theory of my book is that it was the hand that saved us from extinction and over the long course of evolution led to our becoming the dominant species that we are. And probably the main factor was the role of the hand in the use of tools and in the creation of tools.
So basically the trajectory is we start roaming the savannas where our ancestors at that point are upright. They're walking on two legs, which frees up the hands to make tools.
Exactly. So our hands are different from the hands of our ancestors. Their hands have longer fingers and much shorter thumbs, and they're not so nimble as ours. Ours have got a lot more nerves in them, and we've got these shorter fingers, a longer thumb. This would have been a result of the new use of the hands. So the thumb is what you use when you're gripping on to something, which is like a club or something of that kind. That's sometimes called the power grip. And then the precision grip is the grip you use when you're holding a pen or something small like that. And that's probably, it's the precision grip that led to our success as a species.
Now, we know that a lot of other animals do use tools. I mean, simple tools.
Yeah.
For instance, chimpanzees use sticks to fish termites out of their nests. They use branches as weapons. Are you saying there was sort of a more sophisticated kind of cognitive activity that developed with the human hand?
What you'll find is a gradation, a continuum, so that the other apes on the planet now have the ability to use tools. It's just not as developed as ours. One of the things, of course, is that we create tools in a way that apes don't. I mean, they kind of fashion those what are called fishing rods to get termites out of nests. But they don't make automobiles, you know, they don't make furniture, they don't make houses in the way we do.
Now, we should point out that you are not an evolutionary scientist. You are a philosopher.
No.
So why are you so interested in these evolutionary questions about the hand?
Partly it's to do with what people nowadays call embodied cognition. And so when I started thinking about it and reading about the hand, and I noticed what had been written by Darwin about it and other people, it became more clear to me that the hand was crucial in enabling us to be what we are and to have the brains and the minds that we have. We didn't just get a brain for the hell of it. You know, it didn't just evolve naturally. Our brains are formed by our hands because there's no point in a big brain that you can't express in the body.
So you're saying that as the hand evolved to develop this sort of finer motor control, the brain also evolved? I mean, they kind of evolved together?
Yes, it's often called coevolution. When spears were held, when other tools were used, the hand had to adapt to be better at holding a spear than other members of the species. So one hand is slightly better than another because of a mutation, let's say. And then once that hand is different, the brain has to be good at powering that new hand. But it's, see, people sometimes think that the brain just got bigger because it's a good thing to have a big brain. And so evolution was naturally tending towards having a big brain. And so since we're the pinnacle, it naturally tended towards us. But that's a complete misunderstanding of evolution. It really requires an explanation why on earth this species, as distinct from all the other ones that have ever existed and now exist, will have developed this strange thing called intelligence, under which I include language, creativity, science, morality, you know, many things.
And what you say is that it wasn't just any kind of intelligence. It was really a tool-using intelligence that our ancestors developed.
Right. The brain that we developed was the brain of a tool user. And there are many aspects to that. There's a social aspect to it because of people make and use tools together. So you have to, there's a co-evolution of society as well as tools. You know, especially if you're using tools in for hunting, for example, you've got to cooperate with other members of your group and so on. Of course, there were changes subsequent to that. So when language came along, a much later thing, language is quite recent, our brains are adapted towards to having language. But as I understand, as I believe, the first language was a sign language rather than a vocal language. It was only later that vocal language replaced, or partly replaced, a sign language.
So you're saying there's also a connection between our hands and our development of language?
Yeah, the difficulty that people have had with the evolution of language, and people have thought about this an awful lot, is to try to avoid postulating a sudden jump in the evolutionary process whereby there was a mutation and some animal woke up one day and had, well, didn't wake up, was born one day with this mutation and had language and started speaking. Well, that's obviously very unrealistic. It had to be a very gradual process. So I tried to give an explanation of how the hands played a crucial role in developing language. For instance, just to give you an example of it, the hands are useful in mimicry, so we can use the hands to mimic things, as in like puppets.
So I'm just trying to visualize this. So suppose there's some ancient tribe of hominids, hundreds of thousands of years ago. They haven't developed the ability to really talk yet. I mean, maybe they have certain sort of guttural sounds, but they're somehow signaling to each other with their hands?
Signaling with their hands is the idea. Yeah, they'd be miming, they'd be mimicking something. Suppose they wanted to point out there was a dangerous predator in a certain place, you know, relative to where they are. They might mimic the action of one fierce animal attacking another. So the right hand could be used in an attacking motion on the left hand or a finger of the left hand. And that would suggest to people, that's rather like a big cat, you know, saber-toothed tiger attacking a poor puny human. Let's not go over there. Or a mother's trying to feed her child and wants to get the child to eat, so the mother mimics the act of eating. Doesn't actually put the food in her own mouth because she wants the child to put the food in his or her mouth. And the child can see that there's a mimicking of eating going on, but no food's going in the mother's mouth, and gets the idea, she wants me to eat this food.
Well, and then there are whole cultures which are very expressive. I mean, we talk about, talking absolutely with our hands.
Absolutely. So that still exists. So we didn't completely abandon our original hand-based sign language. We just modified it. We enlarged it. We supplemented it. So what would be the reason for that? Well, one obvious reason is, as humans became more and more linguistic, more and more communicative, the trouble is they're using their hands all the time to convey messages to each other. Well, that's using up the hands which have other purposes, particularly the use of tools. So if you're on a hunting expedition carrying your spears and your bows and arrows and all the rest of it, it's no good using your hands to communicate with the other members of your group, because then you can't use them to throw the spears and fire the arrows. So there's a strong evolutionary pressure towards trying to find another way to express things. In human society as it exists today, it's an incredibly hand-based civilization that we have. Almost everything we do is with the hands. At every moment of the day, we're using them constantly.
And there are all these words and phrases that explicitly make a connection between our intelligence and our hands. I mean, to grasp, to comprehend,
that's the best one.
To pick up on, to be seized by, to grapple with a problem.
It's amazing when you start to notice it, how much our talk about our minds is shot through with these prehensive terms, these metaphors. If they are metaphors, I have a section where I discuss whether the word to grasping with our minds is really a metaphor. I don't think it is. I think we literally grasp things with our minds. But all these terms, as you mentioned, comprehend, apprehend, they even embed the term prehend, which is simply Latin for grip. So it's not an accident, surely, that that's the way we talk about the mind.
Well, and to go back to this whole notion that our particular kind of intelligence is a tool-using intelligence, I mean, it would seem that a lot of things would follow from that then. I mean, to some degree, once we recognize that tools are out there, that we can use them, then everything potentially becomes a tool.
Once we develop tool consciousness, when we start to think of the external world as a repository of tools or potential tools, then everything turns into a tool and everything turns into technology. So the way we look at the world consists of objects which we humans can use to make tools to dominate nature. And that's the way we think.
So to bring this story up to the present, I mean, you know, we've talked about the history, the evolutionary history, but what would it mean to truly celebrate our hands in our world today?
Well, it's an interesting question. I've actually thought about it quite a bit. mean, I partly got interested in the subject because I decided I would learn to play the guitar at the age of 60, having played drums my entire life. I thought, let me have a go at the guitar. And the left hand was a tremendous challenge to do that. So I was focusing on my hands a lot. But I was amazed that, despite the slowness of my progress, that I was making the kind of progress that I was. And I realized how educable the hand is. I have the sort of fanciful idea that it would be nice to have a kind of cult of the hand. It's a sort of tongue-in-cheek. I like to call them the Grand Order of Gripparians, you know, like as one of these societies or something I call
so,
it.
So what would be some of the elements of the cult of the hand?
I made a sort of a list of more or less amusing ideas about what the cult would involve. You know, it would involve wearing gloves at the right time, keeping the hands clean, having days of the year when you'd, you know, dedicated to the hand, you know, the day of the thumb, you know, or something. I even had the idea maybe you could rename the weeks, the days of the week by the digits, in different digits, or rename the digits themselves. I don't think the little finger, or as Americans say, the pinky, it seems to me a bit disrespectful toward that finger. So it was not going to make much difference to, you know, the way we live. But it's, you know, if you ask yourself what would happen if, you know, there was some terrible virus that afflicted the human hand, so all the hands became useless because of the virus, it would be a total disaster. Fortunately, there's no such threat, but it would be a complete disaster.
Philosopher Colin McGinn talking with Steve Paulson. His book is called Prehension.